ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे जय राधव कुंजा बिहारी जय राधव कुंजा बिहारी Yeah. बिहारी। जय राधा माधव तुंजा बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस प्रिय राधिकाचार्य ज्येष्ठोत्तर श्री श्रीमद्भाई चरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस प्रिय राधिकाचार्य ज्येष्ठोत्तर श्री श्रीमद् शील भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णविंद की जय। नाम आचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरी गौर भक्तिवृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोगोपीनाथ श्यामकुंद राधाकुंद गिरी गोवर्धन की जय। श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। श्री मायापुर नवदीप धाम की जय। श्री जगन्नाथ पुरी धाम की जय। तुलसी देवी भक्ति देवी की जय। जमुना देवी गंगा देवी की जय। सामवेद भक्त वृंद की जय। All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gop Premanande Hari Bol. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, Lord Vishnu's Appearance in the Sacrificial Arena. And we're taking up at text number 3. Sudhiya saravo loke Naradeva narottama Nabhi druyanti bhutebhyo Yarhi natma kalevaram Sudhiya. The most intelligent persons, sadhava, who are inclined to perform welfare activities, loke, in this world, naradeva, O king, narauttama, the best of human beings, na abhidruyanti, never become malicious, Bhutebhya, toward other living beings. Yarhi, because. Na, never. Atma, the self, or soul. Kalivaram, this body. Translation, O king, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others, is considered best amongst human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. Please repeat. O King, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activity for others, is considered best among human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. In daily life, we find that when a madman commits murder, he is excused even by a high court judge. The idea is that a living entity is always pure because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he falls into the clutches of material energy, he becomes a victim of the three modes of material nature. Indeed, whatever he does under the influence of material nature. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5:14, na kartritvam na karmani lokasya srijati prabhu na karma pala samyogam Subhavas tu pravartate. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. Actually, the living entity or soul does not do anything. Everything is done under the influence of the modes of material nature. When a man is diseased, the symptoms of the disease become a source of all kinds of pain. Those who are advanced in transcendental consciousness or Krishna consciousness are never envious, neither of the soul nor of the activities of the soul under the influence of material nature. Advanced transcendentalists are called sudhiya. Sudhi means intelligence. Sudhi means advanced, highly advanced. And sudhi means devotee. One who is both devoted and highly advanced in intelligence does not take action against the soul or the body. If there is any discrepancy, he forgives. It is said that forgiveness is a quality of those who are advancing in spiritual knowledge. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Katahmayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Varshavana Bidevi Daitaya Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jvala Premadya Shri Rupanuga Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gaurakishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambu Jayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sakchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Sarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gaura Virabhava Bhomestvam Nirdesa Sajjana Priya Vaishnava Sarva Bhoma Shri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Sarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam
Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatam Sudatau Pangor Mama Manda Matirgati Matsarvasva Padambo Jau Radha Madana Mohano Divya Vrindaranya Kalpadrumata Srimadratna Gara Singhasanastal Srimad Radha Srila Govinda Deva Prishtalibhi Sevya Mano Smarami Srimad Rasada Sarambi Vamshivata Tatastita Karshan Venu Swanir Gopir Gopinatha Shriyestunaha Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindai Tulsi Devyai Priyai Keshavasicha Vishnu Bhakti Prade Devi Satyavachai Namo Namaha Sri Nishinga Jai Nishinga Jai Jai Nishinga Pralada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Yada Yada Hitarmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata Abhyutana Matarmasya Tadatmanam Srijamyaham Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam Tharamasam Stapanartaya Sambhavam Yuge Yuge Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyajimam Namaskuru Mami Vaishyasi Yukvaivam Atmanam Aparayanah Sarvadharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja Ahang Tong Sarva Papebhyo Mukshaisha Mimasuchaha Shushusho Sharadhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahat Sevaya Vipra Punyatirta Nishevanad Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantaksto Hyapadrani Vitunoti Suhritsatam Nashta Prayeshu Padreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Paktir Bhavati Naishtiki Tada Rajastamo Bhava Kamaloba Jayashaye Chaitaitera Navidam Stitam Satve Prasidati Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogataha Bhagavad Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangas Sajayate Vidyate Hrude Grantish Chijante Sarva Samshaya Shiyante Chasya Karmani Trishta Evat Manishwade. Oh, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Surya Sarva Loke Naradeva Narottama Nabi Truyanti Bhutebhya Yarhi Natma Kalevaram. We are, both Nirkul and I, thrilled to be back here in our home away from home, sister temple to our temple in California. And I thank Bhakti Marg Swami again and again, falling at his lotus feet, for the opportunity to be here, as he is the one who first invited us many years ago and has been my mentor for many years. And I thank you very much, Maharaj. I was just reading recently about how the best leadership is conducted in a way that encourages others. And Bhakti Marg Swami is the epitome of encouragement for every person, every living entity that he meets. So I feel a great debt of gratitude from my deepest core of my heart. Jai! And to all the devotees here, we're always counting the days until we come back to be here. Such a warm feeling, and throughout one's life when one can have the opportunity to be in the association of devotees to hear and chant and then develop an attachment for it is the greatest benefit of life. Because after all, our success in life is based on our bhava. That is our heart's feeling. And that's what really drives us. And when we develop that for the association of devotees, then we can have success in life. The ultimate success in life is to remember Krishna at the time of death. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that is dependent on one's bhava, the overwhelming feeling that one has within one's heart. So our practice of bhakti really is an accumulation of these experiences that we have when we feel deeply for the association of devotees. So we feel that when we come here, and we are forever grateful to all of you for keeping the vibration going at such a high level here. It's a sacred place that you all live in, and the duties that you all do, although they may seem difficult at some times to carry on, have no doubt that you're having a huge impact on the world. What to speak of preparing yourselves for the greatest of all destinations, going back home, back to Godhead, however difficult it may seem at times. Hare Krishna. So this verse today is spoken by Lord Vishnu himself, so we feel compelled to hear his words, and it reveals his nature as he's a great encourager. He's the greatest of all encouragers. In fact, as we chant the Gayatri Mantras, we say that the Prachodayat is one of the words within the Gayatri Mantra, without revealing all of them and the whole mantras. But Prachodayat means to feel encouraged, or the great encourager. So this is what Krishna is doing for every living entity. And in this context, the verse today, Vishnu has appeared because the king has shown such great qualities that the Lord feels compelled to appear before him and to give him some benediction. So he's speaking to him, and this is this topic of encouragement, or forgiveness, is here because Prithu Maharaj previously, we'll find, had been performing special sacrifices, which was the prescribed duty at the time. He was performing Ashwamedha Yajnas, where a horse would be brought to the sacrificial arena, and then through mantras, it would be given a new life to prove the efficacy of the mantras. I don't know that much about Ashwamedha Yajnas, but I do know that they were performed in highly rarefied circumstances by qualified brahmanas, and the technology was such that they could actually rearrange the molecules and bring back an old horse to new life. And this was a kind of sacrifice from the Vedas that brought immense piety to the kingdom. So the king would perform these kinds of sacrifices in order to help the citizens. Just as any kind of authorized sacrifice brings piety, it brings auspiciousness to the people. But King Prithu was such a selfless servitor. If you read through, when you read through, this section of Prithu Maharaj, and one can read this again and again. In fact, the benedictions at the end of the descriptions of the pastimes of Maharaj Prithu are numerous. The benedictions that Shukadev Goswami mentions from hearing about Prithu Maharaj are absolutely stunning. It will compel one to read it again and again. And as we read it recently while we were in Govardhan, we felt great encouragement from hearing about the nature of Prithu Maharaj. He was a king, and his entire being was dedicated to helping and protecting all of the citizens. And of course, in Vedic times, the citizens are described as praja. That means anybody born within the circle of influence of the king. Not just human beings, and not just special interest groups, and not just people with a lot of money, but people, anybody, any living entity who's born. And this is the vision of a pure devotee, as was Prithu Maharaj. Actually, he is a Shaktivesh avatar. He's a manifestation of one of Krishna's potencies to display in the world, especially Prithu Maharaj displays in the world the Krishna's potency of managerial expertise. And the main quality that he had was compassion, and also this feeling of forgiveness for the living entities. So he, like other managers in this world, anyone who's managed anything, knows that it comes with responsibility, which means that the weight comes on you, and that can be quite daunting when everything comes back to you. And Prithu Maharaj was performing his 100th horse sacrifice, which was actually a big deal, because the only other person who had ever done 100 horse sacrifices was quite costly. It cost more than an iPhone 10 to put on a horse sacrifice. Like, it cost billions of dollars to put on a horse sacrifice in today's monetary terms. And he had performed 99 horse sacrifices. Indra had performed 100. And Indra, who is a manager, but who is also known for being affected by the mode of passion, became envious when he saw that Prithu Maharaj now was going to perform 100 horse sacrifices, because Indra wanted to be known always as the one who had done 100 and didn't want to be surpassed. So at the 100th horse sacrifice that Prithu Maharaj is performing, Indra showed up, but in disguise. And he put on the dress of a sannyasi. Although he's not a sannyasi, he tried to fake everyone out. Now at that time, anybody who was wearing the clothes of a renunciate was considered to be highly worshipable. Even in India now, if you walk around, if you just want to do an experiment, we don't recommend it, but if you actually, you can just watch a bona fide sannyasi walk around in India, people will immediately offer obeisances. And so Indra then, to fool everybody, dressed up as a sannyasi, and he came and stole the horse so that the sacrifice couldn't be performed. So Prithu Maharaj's son went after this sannyasi to take the horse back, and then he realized that it was actually Indra. But still, because of him wearing the dress of a sannyasi, he was reluctant to do anything. So they started the sacrifice again, and Indra came back as a different kind of sannyasi, and he stole the horse again. He did it 3 times. And after the 3rd time, Prithu Maharaj became angry. And he drew his bow, which was known to be infallible in punishing those who would do misdeeds in his kingdom. And he had the full impetus to kill Indra. So at that time, Brahma came to instruct King Prithu, and he gave him really powerful advice. And he said, when these kinds of reversals come into your life, you should know them to be coming from providence. And therefore, you shouldn't try to reverse them. You should see it as a sign. And he said, if you try to reverse some of these great reversals of fortune that come into your life, then you'll simply enter deeper into the dark well of anxiety. And Prabhupada comments in his purport in that section that even highly advanced religious people undergo reversals of fortune in their life, and that they simply tolerate them and go on with their services without being overturned without stopping their service. Because by trying to reverse them, by trying to stop these things that come obviously of their own force, then one becomes more and more implicated and becomes deeply absorbed in anxiety. So this is the context of this verse. And Vishnu, after Prithu Maharaj had and Indra had come to terms, because the suggestion was by Brahma, just let Indra have 100 and you take 99. Don't worry about it. And so Prithu Maharaj, being the great soul that he was, said, yes, fine. I did my duty as far as possible. And Indra apologized, and Prithu Maharaj forgave him. And now Vishnu, being so pleased with Prithu Maharaj, has appeared in the assembly, and he's offering these benedictions. So here he says to Maharaj Prithu that, O king, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best among human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. This is the key to success in life. And that is to know the difference between the body and the soul. In fact, Krishna says in the Gita, Kshetrajnam chapi mam viti sarva kshetrushu bharata kshetra kshetrajnur jnanam yatash jnanam matam mama. He says, here's my opinion, that real knowledge means to know the difference between the body and the self. You have to be able to see that you're residing within a field. You're not the field, but you're residing in the field. And he goes on to say that you should be able to also identify not only yourself as being different from the field, but also to understand that there's also a super knower beyond you, where Prabhupada describes elsewhere as the super spirit. There's a spirit and the super spirit. So if you can understand these three things, then you're in knowledge. First thing is, I'm not my body. The body's a field, or it's a city, as Krishna gives the analogy in Bhagavad Gita, a city of nine gates, or a field of activities, or a mechanical, biological robot. And then one should also be able to recognize the super spirit, that is, the one who is described in the Vedas as nityo nityanam. There is a plurality of eternal souls, and then there's also the super soul or the super spirit who is providing for all of them, who's the source of all of them, just as the sunshine is there as the product of the sun. And they're eternally connected, but one's dependent upon the other. As we go on book distribution out into the great unknown, known as the public, you never know what's going to happen out there. And that's why going out to distribute books is a kind of a sadhana, because one then goes out to apply the philosophy. There's math and there's applied math. There's physics, there's applied physics. There's application of philosophy, and that's most important, because by the application of this philosophy of the understanding of the field and the knower of the field and the super spirit, then as one enacts that philosophy by following the order of Lord Chaitanya and going out into the world, or staying in, where everyone is, and attempting to give mercy to others, then one comes to actually realize these things. Theoretically, it may be difficult to ascertain the difference between my body and myself and to know the super spirit. But by performing the Yuga Dharma, the yajna of Sankirtan, and going out and showing compassion to others, one can realize it very, very quickly. One of the ways, practical ways in which I've seen this and gained realization in my own practice of book distribution is when I meet people, I tell them that they look spiritual. And this is there's a profound reaction that I find when I tell people that. Have you ever had an occasion where you come out of your ashram and you meet one of your god brothers or god sisters or a friend, and they say, boy, you look tired? Ever? Has anybody ever had that? How do you feel after they tell you that?
Tired.
Yeah, you feel like you look in the mirror. It's like, what's wrong with me? You know? Or somebody that comes up to you and goes, oh, you look terrible. How do you feel then? And if you come up to somebody anywhere, any living entity, especially humans, and you say, you look spiritual, there's an immediate reaction that they have, and they get instant self-realization just by you recognizing that they're spiritual, because that's the one thing they've forgotten that makes all the difference in the world, that they're actually spiritual, that they're not their body. And if you in the course of your interacting with other living entities, you treat them as spiritual beings rather than as their body, then they respond, because living entities aren't their body. And spiritual realization is the closest thing to us, because that's who we are. Not only that, the super soul, the super spirit, is the closest thing to us. He's always there for us. Tadejati tannayajati tadure tadvantike tarantarasya sarvasya taru sarvasya sibayata. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he's outside of everything. He pervades everything, but he's very intimately connected with us, more than with anything else or anybody else. We have an intimate connection with him. And when we enact the Yuga Dharma, what we're doing is bringing people immediately back into the consciousness, the awareness, that actually they're part of the Supreme Spirit. This is Sankirtan. And when you say to people, you look spiritual, they suddenly become self-realized. You can watch as you say these words to people, you look spiritual. They immediately internalize and they think, oh, I look spiritual? And then they suddenly realize, oh, I'm a spirit soul, actually. No wonder I look spiritual. And then if you ask them the reason that they look so spiritual, they start to introspect a little more, and they think about, like, why am I so spiritual? And this kind of reminder is the best kind of encouragement that anyone can give, is to remind others that they're spiritual. And so, according to the purport that Prabhupada's giving today, this is the main duty of a highly advanced person. And what is a highly advanced person? He's described by Vishnu in this verse as Sudhiya. Sudhiya. Sudhiya is the first word he uses, and this means the most intelligent persons. The most intelligent persons, Prabhupada said, are called Sudhi. It means intelligence, it means highly advanced, and it means devotee. And in his purport, Prabhupada then gives some philosophy about how it is that one becomes mixed up with the material world. So what happens is, the soul, being a small part of Krishna, has free will and can become bewildered by forgetting his constitutional position as a servitor of Krishna. In which case, then he becomes captured by the illusory energy of the Lord. And now, Prabhupada quotes in his purport, Nakartritvam Nakarmani Lokasasrajati Prabhu, the karma pala samyogam svabhavastu pavartate. He says that once the soul becomes captured by the illusory energy, then he comes under the control of the three modes of material nature, who then influence him to act in various ways. Comes under that control. So there's ways in which we're taking in information from the world, and through our conscious, we are conscious living entities, but we're within a mechanical body that also has software that runs it. In fact, you have to have the software, which is the mind and the intelligence, in order for the physical body to interact with the external nature, kind of a virtual reality experience. And according to how that software is affected by the three modes of material nature, whatever information one takes in, one will perceive in a certain way. Krishna mentions this in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which we're reading right after Mangal Artik every day. For those who like to read more Gita, just come to Mangal Artik, and right afterwards, Bhakti Marg Swami will read you a verse, which will change your whole perspective for the day. So in the 17th chapter, in the very beginning, Krishna says that a person is sees the world according to the way in which he or she is affected by the modes of material nature. So when we assume various modes of nature because of our association, purusha prakriti stohi bhute prakriti jangunan karanam gunasangosya sadasadyoni janmasu, Krishna says in the 14th chapter of the Gita, we become affected by our association. We take on, or sometimes Prabhupada says, infected. We get infected by the modes of material nature. Those are very small. The living entity can be easily affected by the influence of all external influences, either spiritual or material. We become affected. And in the case of the modes of material nature, we become infected. And then Krishna says, the person becomes the modes he has acquired in the material world. So whatever information we take in, we then interpret according to the modes we've acquired. And our mind and intelligence are formed by that kind of effect of the modes that we've acquired. So we don't see the world the way it is, as one philosopher once said, Epictetus. He said, we don't see the world the way it is, we see the world the way we are. And that's the effect of the modes of material nature. And so that is, there's an idea that we're independent, but actually we're being controlled by the modes of material nature. So Krishna confirms in this verse that Prabhupada quotes, Nakartrut from the Karmani, he said, the living entity is not actually doing it. Nakarmani, lokasya sujati prabhu, nakarma pala samyogam, that these the karma and the fruits of his activities are coming because of svabhavastu pravartate, because of his being mixed up in the modes of material nature. And then in the next verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that I'm not responsible for these things. I'm not forcing the living entity into this situation, but it's going on because of his being mixed up with the lower, with the modes of material nature, birth after birth. So, one who, and the point that's being made in this purport, is one who understands this, the existential situation of the soul within the material world, then has compassion for living entities. Doesn't become malicious towards them. This is also, I'm just going to give a little more evidence and then I'm going to take some reflections. But in the Sri Upanishad, it is said, Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatuna vijugupsate. One who sees systematically that all living entities are spiritual beings and they're part and parcel of the Lord, and who sees everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord, never hates anything or any being. Tatunava jagupsite, he doesn't hate anybody. He sees what's happening, that there's a mix-up with the small living entity and the modes of material nature, and he's become implicated, and therefore he's acting in various ways. So he doesn't become angry or malicious towards a living entity. In another section of the Shastra and the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's mentioned that a realized soul sees that the material nature is working in a uniform way, which means that everybody's getting exactly what they deserve according to their activities. And therefore, there's no cause for concern because everything is working perfectly, in perfect order. And therefore, in that context, Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya actually, or the author, Kaviraj Goswami, quotes the Smriti Shastra and says that, therefore, it's an injunction that one should not criticize or praise anyone because things are working in such a uniform way. But then it goes on to say that it's okay to praise, but it's not okay to criticize of the two. So, this verse, I just quoted from the Sri Upanishad, says that one should systematically see this way. The word is anupashyati, everyone say. So anu means to follow, and pashyati means to see. So we shouldn't see with our own affected intelligence or mindset. Our own worldview may be affected because of the modes that we've taken on. There's malware there that's gotten into the software. So you have to be a little careful the way you interact. You have to use an antivirus program to come out of this. And this is called Anupashyati. Actually, the Srimad Bhagavatam is an antivirus program. And you have to run it regularly through the software of your mind and intelligence to do away with malware. There's a lot of adware that gets in there also. It attaches itself to the software, and it won't come out unless you put in a really strong antivirus software. And that is the Srimad Bhagavatam in Bhagavad Gita. So this is Anupashyati. It means to see and relate, see according to the scripture and according to the previous acharyas, those who have perfectly followed the scripture, and see their life's example and their worldview. And if you do that, so then even if you're in a conditioned state, you can rise above that by Anupashyati. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanupashyati. Follow this way of seeing that the acharyas are seeing and that the scriptures see. Then you can have the same vision, and that is that living entities are not their bodies. I'm not my body. And that therefore you'll relate to the world and to others within it in a benevolent way. In the same way that Lord Vishnu is indicating here, that everyone should be compassionate and not malicious towards other living entities. And then the next verse in the Sri Upanishad, Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani Atmani Vanupashyati Sarva Bhuteshu Cha. No, excuse me. Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani Atmai Vadbhu Vijanata Tatrako Mahakashoka Ekat Vamanupashyata. If one sees like this and sees that all living entities are actually spiritual sparks, then there's no shoka, there's no more lamentation for such a person. Because after all, my main lamentation starts by thinking that I'm part of the material world. And this causes great fear. Bhayam dvitiya binibesha tasyad. It means I identify myself with my body and all the things in relationship with my body, and therefore, bhayam syat, fear arises within me. And lamentation comes from this misconception that I'm the body. But this verse in the Sri Upanishad says that to solve your problem, you should understand you're spiritual. You're not part of the world. In fact, there's a verse, one of my favorite verses, maybe my all-time favorite particle of a verse that is Prabhupada quotes frequently within his purports, is a Sangho Hyayam Purusha from the Vedas. And it says, living entity, you have nothing to do with the world. What a burden that lifts, isn't it? Suddenly you realize you have nothing to do here. You have not only nothing to do here, you have nothing to do with it. And this is what these verses are saying. The living entity somehow or other has gotten mixed up in the modes of material nature. Somehow or other. This is even what Lord Chaitanya says. You know, don't even cast aspersions on the living entity. Somehow or other he got mixed up here in the material nature. So help him out. And help yourself out. And be compassionate, just like Lord Vishnu is. And this is actual happiness. Compassion means happiness. When one actually develops a soft heart and feels for other living entities, this is the highest yoga, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Atmam pamyena sarvatra samam pashyati yo arjuna. Sukham vayari vadukam sayogi paramomataha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the section of Jnana Yoga, which is describing how to meditate, how to actually come to see yourself as non-spiritual, as spiritual and non-material. He says that the highest achievement in this yoga is to develop empathy for others. Atmau pamyena, sarvatra, samam pashyati, because you see all living entities as being all part of the same origin. And he says, sukham varyari vadukam, because you understand what they're going through, both in their happiness and their distress. Sa yogi paramomata, this is the parama yogi, the highest yogi is the one who has this kind of compassion and wants to do good for others. So that's what's also being advocated, what Prabhupada's advocating in his purport, pursuant to the statement that Lord Vishnu is making to Prithu Maharaj, that this is the best, this is the highest intelligence to come to, that I'm not my body, others are not their body, and therefore I should live a life of compassion. And I should extend myself in ways that I can help other living entities. And this kind of life actually brings real happiness. Otherwise, I live in the small world of my mind. The idea that I possess something in this material world is a complete fallacy. I don't have anything. I can't hold on to anything. I don't have anything. It's being leased at best, and it'll be taken away at any minute. But what can't be taken away is the fact that we have the feeling of unlimited compassion for other living entities when we realize our duty in spiritual life. I wanted to just, one more thing, enter into evidence. From the mantras I quoted from the Sri Upanishad, I noted recently a paragraph that I thought would be very important to read. This is from Mantra 7, the last paragraph. The Param Brahman is as much a person as the individual entities. Neither the Lord nor the living entities are impersonal. Such transcendental personalities are full of transcendental bliss, knowledge, and life eternal. That is the real position of spiritual existence. And as soon as one is fully cognizant of this transcendental position, he at once surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Being, Sri Krishna. But such a Mahatma, or great soul, is very rarely seen because such transcendental realization is achieved only after many, many births. Once it is attained, however, there is no longer any illusion or lamentation where the miseries of material existence are birth and death, which are all experienced in our present life. This is the information we get here in this mantra in the Sri Upanishad. And also, from Mantra 6, last paragraph, according to the Bhagavad Gita 18:54, only one who is already on the liberated platform, Brahma-Bhuta, can become an Uttama Adhikari devotee and see every living being as his own brother. This vision cannot be had by politicians who are always after some material gain. One who imitates the symptoms of an Uttama Adhikari may serve another's outward body for the purpose of fame and material reward, but he does not serve the spirit soul. Such an imitator can have no information of the spiritual world. The Uttama Adhikari sees the spirit soul within the material body and serves him as spirit. Thus, the material aspect is automatically served. So there's a way in which these verses can be taken up by somebody who's not qualified and misapplied. And Prabhupada gives the way that one becomes disqualified if one's a politician. That means that if you're seeing that there's something in it, if I'm motivated, I want something out of other living entities, then it's impossible for me to give them full compassion. I have to become free from the desire to exploit others. And this position can only be achieved by one who is feeling complete self-satisfaction through the practice of genuine spiritual life and feeling reciprocation from the Supreme Spirit. When one has that, Krishna says in the Gita 6th chapter, one feels there's no greater gain. And therefore, I have nothing to gain from others, only the impetus to give. And in that situation, one can feel the ultimate happiness in life. So this can be attained by the process of Krishna consciousness as given by Srila Prabhupada as a representative of Lord Chaitanya. And that means to follow the practice of hearing and chanting, and then extending oneself as much as possible to give others a chance to come in contact with the spiritual vibrations so that they can realize their original spiritual nature. And these two things, side by side, bring one to the perfection of life and to the highest position of yoga. In this age of Kali, it's the only possible means of attaining this highest conception of spiritual life. And now I'll take some reflections. Yes, Maharaj.
I was just wondering if you ever have given some consideration to the number three, because you mentioned that the preacher was, let's say, not forgiving on the third offense. And so, you know, it's also something in baseball, three strikes in a row. So have you already used some confidence? Is that just enough, like a convenient figure to indicate that you're sincere, to separate sincerity from insincerity?
Do you mean because he waited till the third time?
Why not two?
No, but he was going to kill him. I mean, they didn't know who was doing it. It was a little bit confusing because Indra specifically came as a sannyasi. So they really, it took a little while to figure out what to do. And that happens often when there's a situation in our lives. Sometimes it takes a little while to figure out what to do. And they didn't know what to do exactly at the time. And so Prita Maharaj was reacting. When he figured out what was actually going on, he became angry and he wanted to kill Indra. So it was just that it took a little time to decipher what was going on in that whole assembly. And when he figured out that Indra was intentionally ruining his yajna, he became really angry. And I think it's really interesting. That's one of the reasons I think you presented that play about Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj also, although the consummate pure devotee, became carried away by his duty as a kshatriya, so much so that Swayambhuva Manu had to come and remind him and say, by the way, I know you're doing your worldly duty here, but you don't have to kill so many yakshas. And so in this situation, Prithu Maharaj became very angry at Indra. And then their higher authority came to say, you know, maybe take another course. And this also indicates how important it is to stay always under guidance. Gaudiya Vaishnava is a culture. Gaudiya Vaishnavism is a culture of guidance. Even it's mentioned that Bharat Maharaj, as a great soul as he was, his folly was when he didn't have any guidance. When he started becoming attached to the deer, the acharyas say he wasn't guided properly. And if he had been, somebody could have come along and said, excuse me, by the way, that's a deer you're attached to? It's not a big deal? And so forth. So that was my understanding of the situation. Yes, Gaurav Prabhu. I'm sorry, yes. Oh, rephrase the questions. Okay. Maharaj was asking about why it was three times that Indra stole the horse and then Prita Maharaj reacted.
You referred to the phrase reversals of fortune.
This is Gaurav Prabhu, the famous Kirtaniya and Sankirtan devotee. And he's saying, why is it that I referred to reversals of fortune
as being an intervention of the Lord. How does one distinguish between that and the karma that one's experiencing?
How does one distinguish between that and the karma one's experiencing in one's life?
Or is there really no need to distinguish?
No, there is a need to distinguish. And devotees should know that because they've surrendered, even if one surrenders once to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he no longer has he's no longer getting ordinary karma, but he's getting the Lord's direct mercy. And this is confirmed in many situations, verses in the Shastra. For instance, Narada Muni says, Navajano jatu katanshana vrijan mukunda sevan yavaranga samsritim smaram mukundang rupaguharam punar vihatami chenna rasagraho jana. He said a person who once surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if he falls down somehow or other, doesn't undergo material existence like others, because he's always under the protection of Mukunda. And therefore, he remembers again and again, while he's getting these kinds of so-called reversals of fortune, He remembers the lotus feet of the Lord and thinks, oh, I'm actually a devotee. These things are coming. It's also confirmed in the verse, Te anukampam susamikshamanu bunjana evatmakritam vibhakam ridvagbapur vir vidudam namaste jivetan yomukti pade sadayabak. Yomukti pade sadayabak. This verse is by Brahma. And he says that the attitude of a devotee is that whatever kinds of reversals of fortune are coming to me in this world are directly the mercy of the Lord. And because he accepts them as such, he's qualified to go back to Godhead. And in the purport, in the commentary, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Sridhar Swami say that the devotees, because they surrender to the Lord, don't get karma. Sometimes it seems like karma, but actually it's the direct will of the Lord imposed upon the devotee. Because, says Sridhar Swami, Krishna knows the last vestiges of desires that the devotee may hold within his or her heart to enjoy the material world. He's acutely aware of whatever I'm holding back. Even though I've surrendered, there may still be a residual, just like if you burn toast, or more likely a chapati, which is harder to do maybe. Or maybe a papadam. You burn a papadam, that's easy to do. And a day later, someone can walk into your house and say, hey, you burned a papadam in here. So in a similar way, even after you surrender, there still may be a slight scent of desire to enjoy the material world. It's just, they can barely smell it, but it's there. So Krishna knows that. And to purify the devotee, he imposes a certain kind of reversal of fortune in the life of the devotee that will specifically make him give up that last vestige of desire to enjoy the material world. And there's other evidence in the Shastra in which the fifth canto is said that the devotee may request the Lord again and again for material benedictions. And the Lord will reciprocate and give those benedictions, but he gives them in such a way that the devotee doesn't want them anymore. And then instead, he'll say, okay, Krishna, I just want you. So it's a fail-safe system. When you surrender, then you can go the easy way or the hard way. But Krishna is going to drag you along. Prabhupada mentions that in the Upadeshamrita. If you decide, oh, I don't want to go anymore, then Krishna will forcibly drag you. My mother, when I went for shots, I hated shots when I was a kid. And she told me, you know, you can have ice cream afterwards and, you know, you'd be good. And you just, you know, tolerate and go in there. And I thought I was going to do it okay. But I got in, the kid before me went nuts. So then I kind of freaked out too when I went to get my shot. I didn't get my ice cream. Maybe that's why I like it so much now. I forgot my point now. But, oh, I know, the easy way or the hard way. Even if, don't go kicking and screaming, just try to surrender. It's an easier path. Yes, Prabhu?
The this question, a couple of various things to ask. First of all, the Priti Maharaj was being asked in Jalgir. So, as you in the beginning mentioned, it is that we have nothing to do with this material world. You know, why, then if it is, then why have to have ashrama jagga? Because ashrama jagga is related to blessing, richness, powerful, you know. So, there's no reason to do that. And second question would be related to ashrama jagga means so many horses being sacrificed. Now, many people ask this question often, that there is a sacrifice of the animal, you know, cutting the throat, you know, blood all over. So, sacrifice means they understand that subject. So, how do you project that it is not the truth?
First of all, for the second point, that's speculation about blood all over the place. This is just total speculation. Prabhupada emphasizes at least 100 times throughout his purports that these sacrifices have nothing to do with blood all over. They have to do with a very sophisticated technology that was present at the time, is not present at this time. The kind of sacrifices that people imitate and they you know, you see in Cambodia and other countries, or in, you know, the Muslims in Bangladesh killing goats and things like this. It had nothing to do with Ashwamedha yagyas. These kinds of things were enacted on a very subtle level. The science of mantra is extremely subtle and extremely powerful, and more than we can imagine in this age. That's why we're given one mantra, which is, Krishna, please help me. We're not allowed to touch these other mantras because we can't say them properly. You have to be in a rarefied atmosphere, and you have to be brought up in a gurukula in order to be able to pronounce them properly. So the subtlety of the mantra is completely different, and the sacrifices that they're performing are emphasized over and over again to be a kind of a proof of the efficacy of the mantra. And they take place within a very defined system, a Vedic system, which has its ultimate result of pleasing Vishnu. Because as Prabhupada points out in the section of Prithu Maharaj, although these yajñas are apparently karmakanda, at every sacrifice, Lord Vishnu in the form of Shalagram Shila is present. And therefore the ultimate goal is to please Vishnu. And this, he also points out, was the full intention of Prithu Maharaj. As he's performing yajñas, he had no intention of a fruit of activity. His intention was to please Lord Vishnu. He specifically says this in the purport and in the verses. And therefore, when one is performing these kinds of yajñas with the intention of pleasing Vishnu, it has nothing to do with karmakanda. That has to do with one's intention. I have to attend a meeting at 9 o'clock. It starts at 9. And it's one, if I'm late for, I'll commit offense. And so I have to stop now. And I thank you very much for coming here. We'll have more time, to, hopefully, Krishna willing, to be together for more katha. So we'll keep the vibration going. And thank you very much. This is just in the way that I was talking about the Vedic yajna being in a certain circumstance and having a result. This is the same thing. We create this environment so that we can sit and hear Srimad Bhagavatam and discuss it. And the result is that you become self-realized. Om Tat Sat. Vancha Kalpudurvascha Kripa Sundabhavacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Gopre Manande Nitai Gauda Haribo 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 Nitai Gauda Haribo Nitai Gauda Haribo 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 Nitai Gauda Haribo.
Natariyarmarman, 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 hey, Natariyarmarman, 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 Natariyarmarman.